there are plenty of manufacturing companies who put good design at the core of their business. But there are far fewer who can marry beauty, function, and efficiency, all while creating an entirely new product category in an existing industry. Plumin perfectly fits that description. A London-based designer lighting company co-founded by Nicholas Roop and Michael George Hemus. The pair met at an art show and began working together to grow Nick's previous venture, originally called Pakia, a hardware company creating old-school telephone handsets to plug into mobile phones. While coming from very different backgrounds, the two shared a vision for what a design-first brand could become, and set out to solve the problem of inefficiency. And together, after learning the industry and their craft in a meticulous long game, they released the Plumin 001 in 2010, the world's first designer efficient light bulb. The bulb has since been re-released as an LED to incorporate the latest technology, while the brand also makes a series of bulbs, shades, and fittings. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. Here's Nicholas and Michael George now on the importance of lighting and the story of Plumin.
It came through this first company, which was originally called Pakia, and then within 6 weeks of starting the company, we were being sued by Nokia. So we had to change the name to Holger. And that's where we really learnt the basics about running your own business, and particularly a hardware business. So this is 2004, 2005. There weren't many hardware startups. So we had to learn everything from scratch. There wasn't really anyone to go to for kind of teaching on that, so to speak. But then it was through that process of company, which eventually we had to shut down in 2008. But it was through that process where we basically developed the philosophy, and Nick's philosophy in particular, about putting design at the heart of new technologies or existing technologies in order to bring the best out of them. And with, if you think about low energy light bulbs at that time, which were fluorescent bulbs, they either looked like an ice cream whip or a radiator. And the idea there was to take the philosophy that we'd had with the phones and apply it to the light bulb, which is start with a beautiful design if you want people to adopt a new technology. And we felt that that was a much more powerful way to convert people to low energy lighting than, say, just giving them away for free, as the government were doing, or bringing in legislation to force people to adopt low energy light bulbs. That's where kind of Plumin started. Although light bulbs and telephones are very different, there's a lot of similarities as well in terms of manufacturing, in terms of the retailers that we sell to, in terms of how you market it, how you present it, the finances. So we took a lot of the learnings from the first company and applied them into Plumin, and Plumin couldn't have been the success it has been without that first company.
Nick, can you walk us through a little bit of sort of the market in the world that existed where you wanted to apply this beauty in design to a new product? You also, I've read, said this is a bit of a response to what was going on in the world and climate change as well, wanting to not only create something beautiful, but, you know, something that is impactful.
Yeah, so I think I'd actually start with climate change, because this would never have done it without that. When we started, when we really put the idea out, which was 2007, when we kind of announced the Plumin project, there was a lot of chatter about climate change. It really felt like the moment when it had mainstreamed, because obviously it had been bubbling around in the background for a long time, but a whole bunch of things were happening that, you know, an Inconvenient Truth and these things kind of brought it to the fore. And, you know, I found myself thinking a lot about the sort of helplessness of being a human being, trying to sort of adapt your own behaviour, but knowing how little impact that would have, and, you know, looking for more impactful things we could do. And I think it was at that point, and as Michael George described, we were already manufacturing, we were already out dealing with mass manufacture of industrial design products. So, you know, with that in mind, I was looking at the efficient light bulbs of that day, and I just thought, you know, why are they so incredibly boring? And how, you know, if we're going to get people to adopt them, if we're going to get people to move to efficient lighting, you just have to make it more exciting. And you have to make it more coveted. You have to make it much more alluring, because we do live in a free society where people can make those choices. And until you make those choices enticing, you will never really scale the response needed to kind of shift people in the right direction. So obviously we've seen regulatory pressure. So, you know, the governments have been leaning on consumers to shift, but we wanted to be ahead of the game. And I think the comparison we always draw is obviously with how Tesla have achieved that with automotive, which is, you know, EVs, electric vehicles. So many of those brands that have been pushing those kinds of products have tended to make them quite anodyne and kind of lacking in sex appeal and allure. And I think Tesla really cracked the conundrum by creating something that was really attractive, had a really impressive performance story that kind of the masculine identity could relate to. So we felt like the same opportunity was there with lighting, which is, how can we turn these things that feel like a horrible compromise and something aspirational. Obviously, design has a role in that, but there are obviously other factors as well in making that work. You know, how they appear in the world, and you know, inspiring people to think about these things, and you know, is really kind of glorious, luxurious, beautiful lights, but also addressing lighting experience and thinking, you know, there's no point in creating something that looks great on the page of a magazine if it doesn't work in someone's living room. How do we address that and make sure that we've got all the building blocks for a brand in there that is going to walk people towards a better, lower consumption in actually a really big category, because lighting is one of the biggest energy category after heating in the domestic space. And obviously in, when you're talking about businesses, it's a big chunk as well. So even though it's a relatively small product, actually has a big, you know, manifold impact in the, you know, in the energy arena. So we felt like that was something we could actually impact and at scale, which is the important part.
I guess some of the experiences you said, Michael George, from that first business allowed you to sort of come in with a bigger idea and how to build it and how to scale it. But can you walk us through a little bit of how you actually got that off the ground? And as far as, you know, getting the products out there, designing them, it sounds like you had the branding and the message correct, but actually the product, how did you work on that?
Yeah, well, we obviously never sold a light bulb or manufactured a light bulb in our lives. And there were no small light bulb manufacturers out there. And it's still very much the case in the industry now. It's very much price and volume driven. So people, manufacturers tend to want to make 25,000 light bulbs a day, which obviously for a startup is not ideal. So the first challenge was to find a partner. And we managed to find a Danish manufacturer. Danes obviously have a sensibility towards design and the philosophy that we were taking with the bulbs. And so we were able to partner with them, work with their manufacturing capabilities. And then the big challenge was then working out what's possible. So we started at the manufacturing line and we were trying to put a design brief together. And, you know, you usually start when you're putting design brief, working out the manufacturing process. So going to the manufacturer and asking them, right, what is possible? And they're like, we have no idea. We've only ever made two types of light bulb. One is the one that looks like a radiator, the other one that looks like an ice cream whip, and that's it. So they had zero idea. So then we were designing and working kind of with a very wide brief, which sounds ideal, but actually can make things more difficult. We started with one design, took it to the manufacturing line and realized about 10% of the way down the manufacturing line that it wasn't possible. And then went back, designed around that. The next design took us about 30% of the way down the line and realized that it found the next challenge. Then we went back, designed around that. And basically we had a process and we went through about five or six different designs to get to the 001 design. And so it was very much a process of iteration and learning about the manufacturing process in order for that to shape the design brief and come out with the form, which in the end was by far the best design out of all the ones we'd worked on. So that was kind of how the process started, and that got us to our first product. And then from there, it was a question of getting out there and seeing how people react. You know, we'd been working on it by that point for about 18 months, and you kind of, when you're that close to a product, whether it's, I think, technology or hardware, you kind of can lose sight of it, and it's difficult to know how well people are going to react to it. We had absolutely no idea or no inkling that it was going to have the response that it was, and it was going to go and win Design of the Year, and that we were going to go sell hundreds of thousands of them, and it was basically spawn a new category within light bulbs. That was not something we'd envisaged. We just wanted to get out there and see what the reaction would be.
Was it hard to bring people into this idea originally, Nick, or was the climate right for it? As you say, there's a bit of a government pressure, you know, people wanting to do something good and wanting to be efficient, but was it so quick that you were able to get this good recognition, or did that take a little bit of time to bring in investors, bring in partners?
The timing was perfect. It couldn't have been better, actually. We were kind of quite clever in the way that we launched it, whereby we brought the full first order, which was 10,000 units, into the UK ready to sell before we told anybody about it. Because obviously, you know, knowing how news travels, I mean, even then, you know, knowing how fast and how short-lived the news is, we didn't want to launch and then have a product 6 months later to start selling when that had all gone away. So it was quite tense. But when we did press the button on it, the response was fantastic. And I think the reason why the timing worked is because anxieties were high around climate change. It kind of went away, like it got buried again after that, which is not unsurprising for this kind of information. But at that time, people were quite sensitive. And I think everybody was on the same journey we were on, which is, this is a huge, hairy problem. I have no idea how it's going to get solved. I don't have no idea how I can even moderate my own behavior, let alone thinking how everybody on the planet can do the same thing. And here we were with a product that felt like, as an idea, it gave them a sense that they could have their cake and eat it. They could have beautiful things and feel more sustainable. And that was a great relief. And I think that's really primarily what's driven Tesla, like I mentioned before, is that sense that actually you can progress as a human being, you can have lovely things, you can have lovely experiences, and you don't have to compromise. It's not one or the other, it can be both. And obviously, you know, we created a beautiful thing that created an image for that caption to run against. So from a news kind of information dissemination standpoint, it was perfect. It was already cocked and loaded, and so we just needed to press the button and it was out of the gate. And obviously, because we had the product there, we had a really great partnership with this Danish manufacturing partner. We had it on terms that we could do without bringing investors in. So as soon as we were up and running, and day one, we were already a profitable concern. And then it ramped and ramped from there, and we were off to a really, really good start. So it was only actually several years in that we had to consider investment, because we built the business off the strength of that launch.
The 001, great recognition off the initial launch. You've just relaunched this, though, after, you know, this many years. This was in September, I believe, you've relaunched this. So what's changed in that time, and what's the difference in design you were looking at in trying to recreate this?
Because of the strength of the first launch, the 001 design is the signature design of the Plumin brand. I mean, the other designs are fantastic, and they're coming through, they're building. But really, when people think about Plumin, they think about the Plumin 001 shape. So it's become a real identifier. However, that design was based on the technology that was available to us at that time. So the economics and performance and all those aspects meant that we came in with CFL, which is compact fluorescent technology. So it's a tube with argon gas inside, phosphor coating, these kind of mercury fragments which carry the charge through and then illuminate the phosphor. But it's not a great technology compared to LED. So we had a few very strong years, and then we started to see the sort of dampening effect of LED as a technology rising and coming through. And yet we were unable to re-engineer the initial design as an LED because of the way it was structured. So these long flowing tubes, there was no LED technology that would allow for that. So effectively we were waiting for the LED tech to evolve to a point where we could adapt it. And that moment happened 3 years ago, and it was exactly at that moment that we started to engineer the 001 as an LED. So it's the same form, the overall kind of proportions are much slicker. We've dumped plastic and used ceramic in the housing. So it's lots of improvements, but fundamentally it's a different technology that gives us, you know, 20,000 hours life, so average use of 20 years. The light quality is better. It's dimmable. Sounds like a very sort of standard feature of a bulb, but that was one of the problems with compact fluorescence. Also, the other thing is, even though the technology moved on, what we realised that there were some real qualities in CFL that we thought were still pertinent and still valuable. And one of them is the fact that the light spreads evenly over the surface. So it gets a bit sort of lighting nerdy, but if you have a very bright, central, very intense area of light, then your retina shuts down. So even if you have the same light output, if you spread that light out more, you effectively create the perception of a space being brighter. Mm. So what the compact fluorescent did was actually spread the light over a larger surface. It allows you to sort of draw in space, but also your retina is able to open more within the space, so you perceive the space as brighter for the same amount of power, if you like. What that gave us is a kind of a funny sort of brief, which is re-engineer the CFL as an LED and retain that feature of the bulb, which actually doesn't, you know, if you look into most LED bulbs at the moment, you either have that very intense kind of, you're looking straight at the filament, or you have a kind of frosted coating which diffuses it, but then it becomes quite anodyne and quite, you know, uninteresting as a product. We have something which kind of combines both, so you have this wonderful kind of poetic form, but then you also have the diffusion, so it's just softer on the eye and it's more readable, and then it has this perceived increase in brightness.
Hmm. Michael George, if I can just bring you back in here, I want to track back just a little bit and hear about sort of where you went after that initial success, bringing the product to market, which was very well timed and very well received. But what were sort of the next steps that both of you were looking at?
Well, the next step was really to learn our trade. And as I said before, we'd never sold a light bulb before. We don't have a lighting background. Nick has a very good innate feel for lighting, but we didn't know the industry, and it is an old school industry. And also LED was coming of the horizon, so really understanding when that technology was going to mature, how best to realize our vision within the industry, and how to have the impact that we want to have, how to inspire people, you know, the everyday person, how to inspire my mum, for instance, to willingly move over to energy efficient technology, and to do so without even thinking about it, rather than it being sort of forced upon them either through legislation or the fact that it was the only thing that was available. You know, the first thing was to understand what's possible and really understand what our response is going to be and learn our trade over time. So that's what we did. We brought out a second bulb. We brought out different sizes. We made shades. We partnered with other companies. We looked at a whole host of different technologies. And from there, we began to really understand what we were doing, understand the technology, and really understand light, which is important because one of the barriers of people adopting is people don't like the form of the light bulb, that they're expensive, but also they don't like the quality of the light. And even LED, which actually gives off fantastic quality light if you have a really good quality product, even that has a reputation for not being quite as good as the old incandescent bulb. And that's one of the challenges we face as a company, is to make people realize that that isn't the case at all. As Nick was talking about, although the technology for the 001 LED came through about 3 years ago, it was only possible to manufacture a few months ago because we've been working very hard on getting that diffusion right, getting the quality of the light right, and technically pushing it forward. Whereas when we started before, we were kind of designers working within the light bulb space. We now are very much experts in lighting, technologists in lighting, as well as being designers. And so bringing those two together and really shaping our product offering, but also shaping the business and the channels that we sell into.
Has that changed the ambition of the business then as well, having that confidence of you really have a solid ownership of the market and are experts of that craft?
Has it changed the ambition of the company? No, I'd say that our ambition is still the same, is to inspire people to switch to energy-saving technologies, and not just in lighting. You know, we kind of hope that Plumen can be a symbol, with a lot of other businesses that are working within the sustainability or the environmental space, can be a symbol to businesses throughout the world that actually you can have a very strong business that's sustainable, to inspire others to do that. And so our ambition as Plumen hasn't changed. What it has changed is our confidence in what we're doing, our confidence in what is possible within technology, our knowledge of the market, and yeah, our understanding of where to take the business. Because at the beginning, we had this kind of big runaway success, but because we didn't know the industry, we didn't come from the industry, a lot of it was kind of dark or unknown to us about how we could broach different channels. We knew how to sell to retailers because we'd learned that in our previous business, but selling to architects, interior designers we'd never done before, other light bulb manufacturers, even to a certain extent selling light bulbs online, which at that time people generally didn't buy light bulbs online because they were worried about fragility. So all of those things had to be learned and overcome. So yeah, we now have 8 years of knowledge now. Entrepreneurs always talk about the fact that you have to fake it till you make it. And there was a massive element of us doing that at the beginning. And now it no longer feels like that. You know, something that we talk about every so often within the business, like we really have that confidence in knowing what we're doing.
What about the element of inspiring people? Has that changed? Have people's mindsets changed enough where they're looking for a product like this?
Yeah, it has amongst certain people for sure. And also there's a load of other businesses now working within that sustainability space. There's other designer light bulb businesses that didn't exist before. So there's much more choice in people, particularly in London and sort of major capitals in the West, who are moving towards that. But there's still a lot of work to do, and there's still tons of people who have never even seen any of our light bulbs. Tons of people don't even realize that LEDs can give off great light. They're still confusing. You know, now LEDs look like the old incandescent bulbs. You know, they're still confusing the two. So there's a lot of work for us to do. They need a lot of people to still get out in front of and to educate. And also people in general are becoming much more aware of the effect of lighting on their well-being. So you know, if you think about night shift on your phone, I don't know if you've got an iPhone, for instance, but if you have night shift on your iPhone, when the sun goes down, the iPhone takes away the blue out of the screen so that it becomes much more red. And the reason for doing that is that blue light keeps you awake, keeps you focused. That's why you've got strip lighting in offices. It helps people keep focused and working longer, but that's not what you want just before you go to bed or when you're relaxing at home. And light has an enormous effect on well-being, and people are just beginning to realize that. And that's something for us as a business to build on as well. And as technology develops, LED in particular, smart lighting in the future, we'll be able to have a much greater control, and light will become, as well as being functional, will have many other layers of effect on people's lives and be valued much higher.
So as you're designing these pieces with the latest technology now, and to not only be beautiful but efficient, isn't there a concern about being too efficient? The restaurants and architecture firms and offices, which are your clients, what about them not needing to replace bulbs as often? Isn't that sort of bad for business?
The lighting industry, as we know it or as we knew it before, was all predicated on built-in obsolescence. So you probably know already, when the light bulb was created, when it was engineered, it was deliberately engineered to break at some point, so to die. And what that death created was a sales opportunity. Because obviously if you have a light above your dining table and it goes out, you need to go and buy another light bulb and replace it. So it's been a great business, you know, billions and billions and billions business worldwide, predicated on built-in obsolescence. It's the classic. So when LED comes along, it's not just a replacement light source. It also offers and prompts this change. So the 001 LED, we're rating at 20,000 hours, which is 20 years of average use, you know, when we're used to throwing bulbs out every year. Now, that's fantastic for the consumer. It's obviously fantastic for the environment because you're just looking at much less kind of material waste over that time. You know, it's 20 light bulbs we're talking about versus one. So you've got that massive kind of material benefit and just the hassle as well. It takes the hassle out for the consumer. Obviously, when we're talking to investors, they think, well, that's all well and good for the environment. It's great for the consumer. But, you know, that's not great for business because obviously wouldn't it be brilliant if they went every week and, you know, people were happy to replace them? The answer to that and why I think we're part of and one of the prompts, one of the sort of sparks to this big transition in the lighting industry is the reason why people will change the light bulb isn't because it breaks anymore. What is the reason? And the reason will be trend, will be fashion. So they will want to replace the light bulb because they'll want the new model, which in turn will be driven by strong interiors trends. And, you know, there'll be new features of technology that will be attractive as well. You know, they probably won't throw the old one away. They'll probably put that in the, you know, in the larder or something so it doesn't lead to waste necessarily. But, you know, the reason why they're going to change that is fashion-based. So, you know, the way that we're adapting the business with having now combed over everything, re-engineered everything and brought everything from some older technologies to state-of-the-art, so everything's at the right benchmark. The next thing for us is to now start to move the business to a more of a kind of fashion release model, so seasonal launches of collections. So over the next couple of years, we will start to operate in that way. So every 6 months, probably every year to begin with, every 6 months we'll be dropping new collections, and that's how the business will work. And obviously some of the products will stick and will kind of establish themselves as classics and be timeless. Some will probably come and go in these five-year cycles. So in terms of renovations, people who really care about their interiors and are in a position to do it, we'll probably renovate every 4 or 5 years. That's what we know from our data. So, you know, we'll become a part of that cycle and we'll have something new for them the next time they're considering making changes.
It seems like the company, as you've grown up and as the years have gone on, you've really relied on that problem-solving mentality that has brought a lot of success. What are some of the problems you're facing right now or some of the challenges you're trying to overcome in growing the brand still?
All the kind of challenges that you can imagine. So scaling is one of them. Although we've sold internationally, we really focus on the UK market and getting to know the lighting market now, taking what we've done in the UK and replicating that in other countries, France, Germany, America, Japan. That's really important. And then financing, obviously, is really important. On top of that, so I'm in the process at the moment of raising a round of investment, you know, and getting out there, explaining to people how lighting is developing, the importance of it, how we're going to scale and manufacture what we've done so far, and what we've learned so far. I mean, we're kind of different to most startups in a way in that we are 8 years old. So we've actually learned a lot of what we're doing and we have a lot of kind of empirical data to show what we've done and why it's going to go forward in the future. But yeah, we have the same problems to solve as you would imagine in most businesses. And it's a question of staying nimble, staying open-minded, talking to as many people as possible, and, you know, as always, being very positive about what you're doing.
Nick, what's on your plate in the design sense? What are you looking at these days?
What we're looking at constantly is what technology is coming through. So what's the sort of 2, 3, 4, 5 year pipeline for new technology, whether it's as it gets resolved technologically or whether it's an economic thing, which is just waiting for the price to get to a point where it becomes viable for us to use something. So we're tracking a bunch of those things. We're tracking a bunch of kind of procedural technique, industrial processes that we think could be applicable. When those things come together in something viable, then we would go deeper in on a design exploration and start to think about how could we make something really special out of those things. So we have a number of different projects that are at various stages in that journey. Obviously, the big trends in lighting that's got a lot of talk and attention is smart lighting. You know, lighting has been one of the big subjects within the smart home. It's the most intuitive and visible thing. It's one of the things that's had the greatest uptake. You know, I've got all my lights at home rigged up to my Alexa, and actually a lot of people doing that now. We've been watching that, thinking about when and how we jump in because it's kind of an inevitability about it. And, you know, one of the things that's happened recently are the platforms have opened up. So, you know, IKEA's Tradfere platform, for instance, they produce a plug which you can plug a Bluemann light bulb into, and then it comes onto the IKEA network, which is in turn integrated with Google Home and Alexa, Apple's platform as well. So you can just start interacting with Bluemann products now. We see a moment, and it's one that comes together with the well-being arena, where we can take that several steps further and really produce these incredible multi-dimensional lighting experiences. which those two kind of issues will unlock.
It sounds like the beauty and design remains the driver in what you're doing, what you're trying to create.
Yeah, totally, because people march towards lovely things and you have to smash down that path and provide a means for them to do that. And obviously as technology changes, you have to kind of adapt and course correct so that you're moving that direction. But at some point when the market's ready, when the education has sort of flowed through and people have really grasped these concepts, they'll very naturally be able to put that all together in something that, you know, where they will be able to throw those things together themselves. I mean, you can more or less get there today. It's more of a kind of an awareness piece now. But I think that's also why it's an interesting moment for us, because there's no reason why we can't jump in with relatively little investment compared to what it would have cost us 10 years ago.
Michael George, it sounds like a lot of the success has come in the ability to sort of look ahead to what's coming and some of the problems you might have to solve. And I imagine as an entrepreneur, it may be difficult some days not getting bogged down in the day-to-day and all the logistics of things. But I'm curious about the relationship between you two and how that's changed, if at all, and if that remains the key to sort of your success.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changed because the company's changed. When we started out, it was just the two of us. Nick was at Poke on a day-to-day basis, so it was just me in the office, and I was very much head down in the detail. And as you alluded to, as an entrepreneur, it can be quite difficult to get your head out of the detail, but it's critical in order for a business to develop. So at the beginning, I think Nick had much more of the kind of overview. I was working out how to bring that vision to life, get all the details done, putting a team into place. But as that team has got into place, and as we've got to know much more what we're doing, the lighting industry itself, and develop the vision for Plumin, I've been able to step back and, from the business side of things, have that kind of bigger vision, making sure that we're partnering right with the right people, going to the right channels, talking in the right way, make sure we're financed in the right way. And so that's allowed Nick to concentrate on the creative side and the creative vision, and me more on the business vision. And so between the two of us, then that gives the business the kind of overview that needs. We have a team that are taking care of the details whilst we are able to drive things forward and make sure that we stay relevant in the future.
That's all the time we have for on today's show. Thank you very much to Nicholas Roop and Michael George Hemus for coming in to share the story of Plumin. Thanks as well to Alex Port-Felix, who mixed and edited this show. Our researcher is Mirjana Legrasta. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.